Ask the Expert on The Pat Kenny Show.
With Hidden Hearing. Your hearing is our expertise. Visit hiddenhearing.ie.
Cardiovascular disease is the number one cause of illness and death here in Ireland, and early detection of any heart disease is the key. But a new shift in how to deal with coronary artery disease is moving treatment towards a lifelong progressive analysis of what's happening. And to tell us more about this is our Monday expert, Dr. Roisin Colleran, consultant cardiologist at the Mater Private Network in Dublin. You can WhatsApp your questions to Roisin, 087 1400 106. Roisin, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. Thanks for having me on.
Now, we've had loads of developments. I mean, stent technology is fantastic in preventing heart attacks, but often that's very late in the process, isn't it?
Absolutely, Pat. You know, we've had huge developments over the last 70 odd years, diagnostic angiography, bypass, subsequently stents since 1977. So 48 years of iterations in first balloon angioplasty and then iterations of multiple stents.
I would have, if you'd asked me, I would have said 15 years. 1977, yeah.
The first balloon angioplasty, I should say. Yeah. First stents were early 2000, really, okay. And have developed and improved since then. But despite that, Pat, and I suppose remiss not to mention, you know, therapies for prevention or halting progression of coronary artery disease and diagnostics. But despite that, global death rates and morbidity from cardiovascular disease continues to rise. It's projected by the year 2050 that 10.5 billion deaths will be.
Is there any typical age for a heart attack?
Yeah, I suppose, you know, in men above the age of 55 years and in women above the age of 65 years, I suppose would be considered not premature. And below, we do see it below that, but we would be considered premature.
And how early, that person at 55 in the case of a man, 65 in the case of a woman, who's going to have that heart attack, at what stage might we have detected that and therefore done something to prevent it?
That's a great question. So we know it takes decades for a significant plaque or narrowing to develop. So really, if we look, you know, decades probably in advance, we may see plaque and that triggers us to take more of a preventive approach. And I suppose with this document, I was this Lancet Commission document on rethinking coronary artery disease that was published in the last few weeks. We're recommending a shift in thinking away from diagnosing coronary artery disease at the time of a heart attack or by the time somebody has angina, which, as you say, is quite late in the disease process, to a much earlier stage in the disease process, so presence of plaque in the arteries.
Now, what about plaque? Does everybody get plaque?
No, not necessarily. So I guess people who are more likely to develop plaque are people with coronary risk factors. So I suppose we know our typical risk factors, the traditional ones like being overweight, diabetes, cholesterol, high blood pressure, lack of sleep is now considered a risk factor for coronary artery disease. And so people with one or many of these, and of course family history, which we cannot modify.
Is that the biggest factor?
Not really. I mean, I always tell people, you know, it's very unlikely if you have a family history but no other risk factor, it's very unlikely you're going to develop coronary disease. Family history alone won't do it. It's family history plus the presence of maybe high cholesterol or blood pressure or a combination of a few of them. It potentiates the other risk factors. So it's kind of the combination. So I guess if you have a family of coronary disease, it's much more family history. It's much more important that you get your risk factors checked and treated if they are elevated. And of course, very important that you prevent them in the first place if you can.
Yeah. Now, there are drug therapies, you know, always going to go straight to a stent. How good are those drug therapies?
Very good. And I think this is a big part of our document. We know what causes coronary disease. We know we have very good treatments for high blood pressure. Cholesterol are the leading causes at the moment. But of course, obesity and diabetes are going to take over the next 25 years. But we have very good treatments for these. The problem is implementation. So a lot, you know, people aren't being diagnosed or people aren't being started on therapies or not taking their therapies. We know if we were to treat these risk factors in people globally, we could reduce deaths from cardiovascular disease by 80% by 2050.
Wow.
More than 80%.
And if you heard that about any other of the killer diseases, you'd rejoice.
Yeah, absolutely.
That possibility is there. 80% reduction. Yeah. Question now. During a routine checkup last year, my GP picked up a mild heart murmur, which was later confirmed by a cardiologist after some tests, MRI, ECG, etc. I didn't have any symptoms at the time. Since then, though, I've noticed mild discomfort around the area of my heart. I went back to my GP, had another ECG and blood test done. Nothing new was found. Should I be concerned about this ongoing mild discomfort, even though the tests are clear?
So I suppose obviously I'm not sure what exactly was detected, but assuming it was a mild narrowing or leak across a valve, it's very unlikely that the current symptoms are related. I suppose red flag symptoms that we would look for with discomfort would be central, usually pressure, tightness or heaviness brought on by exertion. So quite predictable, brought on by exertion and with rest resolve within 2 to 3 minutes. So that would be a red flag chest discomfort symptom for us. And that should certainly be checked out if that's the case.
Should be checked out. OK. My husband had a stent fitted. He has high blood pressure and high cholesterol. He's on medication for both. I want to ask, how important is diet and exercise along with the meds? He's not great at either, despite my encouragement.
And this is, yeah, a large part of our document, again, implementing what we know. And I mean, this is somebody who's had an event, so very, you know, much higher risk for a further event. If you know, and what we do in that case is just modify the risk factors and try and treat everything to target. So what I will say is if he's on blood pressure tablets and cholesterol tablets, it gives him a little bit more leeway with the diet, assuming they're well controlled. However, I suppose it's important that he you know, if he's overweight, diet and exercise are certainly very, look, they're very important for all of us, but certainly it's important that he keeps the weight normal, because that would put him at risk of diabetes. And also keeping the weight down reduces the number of cholesterol and blood pressure tablets that we need.
Can you ask the doctor, is one cigarette a day okay?
Well,
this is a trick question,
yeah,
isn't it?
It's a trick question. Obviously, the right answer is zero cigarettes per day. But, you know, we know that heavy smokers, if they give up smoking, it takes a lot longer for their cardiovascular risk to come back to that of the normal population than light smokers. And one cigarette a day is obviously light smoking. Of course, the risk is always, will you progress to heavier smoking? But it's certainly better than smoking 10 cigarettes per day.
A couple of times recently in the late evening, I had an uncomfortable pain in my chest. Not a bad pain, but strange. Reasonably sure it's not indigestion, no breathlessness at any time, previous hypertension, but literally systolic 1 point below triggering meds following a 24-hour BP test. I'm 54.
So, yeah, there is a big crossover between gastrointestinal pain and cardiac pain, because they both tend to happen in the same position and can be similar in nature. Sometimes a burning with both, usually with stomach symptoms. What I would say is if it was after eating, it's more likely that it's gastric, but it would certainly be worth checking it out. It's an easy thing to check out and rule out a cardiac cause, whereas we sometimes see people who attribute a heart attack symptom to dyspepsia or stomach symptoms and run into problems. It doesn't sound like you have that scenario, but no harm to check it out just to make sure that there's nothing going on with the heart.
Now, this is a concerning one. In the past few weeks, I've had chest pains around my heart and the right-hand side of my chest. It's like a searing poker. I can't move an inch or breathe in normally without excruciating pain. Tears run down my face from that pain. I'm a very anxious person. I've been to hospital to have it checked out, but nothing is ever found. My cholesterol was 7.5. I started statins and my cholesterol is now 4.4. Heart attacks run in my family. My brother and father passed away from them. My mother had dementia. Why is nothing found in the results at the hospital? I'm early 50s, a woman, don't drink or smoke or eat meat. Help, please.
So that's a tricky one. I guess sharp pain like that is generally not a coronary cause, but of course us women can be a little bit awkward and a little bit different. If you've had it checked out, however, and have had blood tests to show that it's not a heart attack, it's very unlikely. I suppose the pain you describe sounds like inspirational pain, what we call pleuritic pain, which can happen if there's any inflammation around the lung. So with the lung infection would be the big one. But again, they would have checked that out in hospital, I'm sure. If everything looks good on bloods, often it's musculoskeletal, sometimes a bit of costochondritis, where everything else will come back normal, but where there can be a bit of inflammation in the rib cage, and that can be quite painful.
And I presume if you've got something like this, the anxiousness that accompanies it can exacerbate.
Absolutely, yeah. It can be a bit of a vicious cycle. But if everything else looks good and things aren't settling down, maybe a referral to a rheumatologist might be worthwhile.
Someone else says, statins don't reduce plaque that's already there. It stops new plaque from forming.
Absolutely. So
it's a holding operation.
Absolutely. So it halts progression of plaque that's there if we get it to target. And if people do have plaque there, it's really important that we know that rather than just focusing on blockages, because it tells us we need to target a lower bad cholesterol level.
This one, I had an angiogram and told all okay. I still have a very strong irregular heartbeat. I'm on a BO tablet, whatever that might be. Don't know. And it's controlling it very well. Maybe a blood pressure.
Maybe a beta blocker, maybe. I'm not sure.
A beta blocker,
or
maybe
BP,
so.
Maybe, yeah, blood pressure.
Anyway,
yeah.
I'm still worried by the irregular heartbeat.
Yeah. So I suppose the irregular heartbeat, oftentimes if it's flutters that are coming and going or skipped beats or you're just feeling an irregular heartbeat at times in your pulse but without any associated symptoms and energy levels are good, often it's ectopic beats and a Holter monitor, if you haven't had one done, would be useful, I suppose, to outrule anything more sinister and often for reassurance.
My husband has a 60% blockage and was hoping for a stent, but this was refused by a consultant. My husband is 62. Should he not have been given one? Is it better that he didn't get one? He feels the blockage is affecting his fitness levels. Why do you need to wait for more blockage before you get a stent?
That's a great question. So I suppose we consider anything over 50% to be significant, but it doesn't necessarily cause limitation of blood flow. And, you know, when we exert ourselves. And what I mean is we look for a mismatch between blood supply and demand, and I'm not sure obviously what testing your husband has had done, but there are both non-invasive and invasive tests we do to check if that is causing, if that lesion is causing a limitation of blood flow. And if it isn't, then we tend to just try and prevent progression. Obviously, if it is causing a limitation of blood flow, that would be an indication for a stent. So I'll have to assume that that was done by that cardiologist.
You'd obviously want to keep an eye on it, though.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And all the more reason to make sure the cholesterol, the bad cholesterol is really low, blood pressure, all the risk factors are well controlled to prevent progression to a higher level.
A final one. I managed to get my husband to see the doctor last week. He really needed to get his bloods tested. But the doctor said, what would a blood test tell him anyway? Sure, it was tested 2 years ago. What has changed?
Lots
can change in 2 years.
Lots can change, I suppose. I mean, I'm not sure if that was, cardiac blood tests in particular, cholesterol or HB, you know, diabetes blood tests. But
could be anything, PSA test.
Well, yeah, absolutely, of course. Things. I mean, two years is a long time, so I'm not sure what you were requesting in particular. But certainly, anybody with borderline or high levels of cholesterol, we would recommend they check them every year to see. And obviously, anybody on treatment, again, we'd recommend them to have them checked every year to make sure they're still at target.
This one's just popped in. My 13-year-old daughter was told she had mild PR interval prolongation on a recent ECG. Is that something that needs further investigation?
We see it very commonly, but I suppose in an older age group, it's something that doesn't generally cause a problem in older patients and is, we kind of consider it normal variant. 13 is a little young though, so if she hasn't been seen by a cardiologist, I think it would be worthwhile.
Worthwhile doing that. Okay, Dr. Roisin Colleran, consultant cardiologist at the Mater Private Network in Dublin. Roisin, thank you very much for joining us.